Welcome to Double Burst, a podcast about Dice Masters. We are a group of Utah players that want to bring you the latest Dice Masters news, strategies, tips, and more. Whether you're a new or seasoned player, we hope this show has something for you. I'm KT Data, one of your hosts, and welcome to episode 17. In this episode, Russell and Kenneth will be talking about when to attack and when to defend. Alex and Diego are going to give you some highlights from the new Doctor Strange set. And finally, everybody gets together and looks back at old cards and how they can fit in with the new ones. So let's kick it off with Russell and Kenneth talking about attacking and defending.
Okay, guys, we are with Kenneth and the KO King. And we wanted to, this segment's probably going to be more for the newer players, but sometimes the advanced players, like the KO King, is kind of learning one half of the segment. And we're going to be breaking down when to attack and when to defend. So I decided to pick two people who are very well experienced in both, or at least one of them.
What's the attack?
It's the normal way. The rest of us win.
Yeah, it's what happens every time you've ever lost. Someone was utilizing their attack step. Yeah.
That's true.
So how about we start out first with attacking, because that seems to be a little of a contention, because I've seen a lot of new players, especially early game, turn one, turn two, they have maybe two sidekicks, maybe one character on the field. They always have the tendency to attack, even if that one character is like a utility character.
Well, there's that, and we get a lot of questions from newer players. I mean, even when we had Jackie on interviewing us, one of the things that she asked was, when do you attack and when do you block? When do you know? Kind of the first and most obvious rule to use is what your team is built on. If you built your team around walling up and going for lethal, then you obviously don't want to attack as soon as you get something in the field.
Or if you have a retaliation team,
idea. Or even like a ring team, you want to attack when the situation's right. So it depends on your build. But if you are in a draft situation where you don't necessarily have great synergy or a great game plan, the first thing that I think, if you're looking, especially if you're looking at wall against wall, math, do all the math. How many characters does each person have? That's how many, if you have five in your field and your opponent has two, three of your characters are going to get through. If you have one of those guys is big and the rest of them are sidekicks, chances are you're going to get two sidekicks or three sidekicks through. They're not going to let your big guy through. Look at your math. Look at, just do the math. Compare defense. Compare the numbers of dice.
Compare and sometimes your globals, because usually this is where Zach always gets me, is he'll have one more character than I do and he'll just transfer power the biggest guy on my side.
Yeah, to this guy. That's how one of our players lost to me in the Winifred draft last weekend. He was trying to transfer power, and I made sure that whenever I was attacking that I had enough to transfer it back, which he found very, very frustrating, but I was staying on top of the math, and he wasn't. So there's all kinds of math, and if you're looking to get through the one big push, you've got to make sure that you've got the numbers of dice that are going to get through. Assume that only your smallest guys are going to get through, and you're going to do all the damage that you want to have done.
So, and you're one of the guys that I think has the most experience running ring teams. You don't go for the chip damage, right? You're waiting to get that big 20 push.
Yeah,
right?
Generally I'm trying to do 20 direct damage with the ring in one shot.
Yeah, so that's kind of an example. What are kind of a better examples if you're just trying to whittle them down in terms of like characters, specific characters that you may have on the field?
Well, in my experience, it's never a bad time to attack with like Serena.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe the Cheetah, the common Cheetah.
Or common Cheetah that deals one damage. Any of the when attacks deals one damage. Also, some of the smaller things like Black Widow Stinger.
You can't lose with her.
Yeah, you're either going to hit for, what is it, one or two if she goes through, or if they block and knock her out, which she has really small defense stats, you're going to hit them for one. Mm-hmm. So, and she's another great one. She's great on both sides of it. She can be very aggressive or defensive. She's probably one of the very few cards in the game that is so perfect to utilize on either side of that.
Okay, so before we kind of jump to the other side in terms of defense, do you have any other tips for people on when to determine that right time?
really, if it's not part of your game plan, whether that game plan is get, X amount of characters into the field and then attack with Guy Gardeners or with the ring, if your plan isn't built around knowing when to attack, do the math, look at, take your time. If you've got over crushers, look at how much you can get through, look at how many characters you have compared to your opponent, assess the whole thing, and do the math. If you're not very good at math and you want to get into competitive Dice Masters, practice math. All math. Do lots and lots of adding and subtracting quickly.
Yeah, and especially if you're playing an overcrush team, and I fall into this trap a lot, is keep in mind that your opponent can use more than one blocker or they can switch blockers on, so pick the least ideal situation for you.
Oh, yeah. And there's also, just depending on the build, you've got the risk and reward of what if everything goes through? What if everything gets knocked out? What if your team is built on one linchpin character, like say you've got Gorilla Grodd giving everyone overcrush, that gives you the option to attack a lot more often, but you don't necessarily want to attack with Gorilla Grodd because they'll let him through and then no one has overcrush. So it's just kind of using your team, do your math as efficiently as you can.
So everybody knows I probably overanalyze the game too much. So I've been thinking a lot about this, because it is definitely one of the flaws of my game is the actual attack step, because I build so many things where I'm trying to win without ever attacking. So I believe that there is a turn in every game that is a pivotal turn, and it changes based on what you're playing, where I can stay in control of the game by attacking, but if I don't attack that step, then I'm going to end up in a wall game, if that makes sense. So what usually causes my problem with attacking is not getting damage through. I worry too much about mucking up my bag. I always assume my opponent is going to do the same thing I would and either take the damage or do something that way, which is a definite flaw. So force your opponent into decisions and don't always assume you know what they're going to do. It's important to look at that, but force their decisions. So like I said, I think there's that pivotal moment. This is why I get into a lot of wall-up games, because I'm overthinking and overanalyzing. I don't want to muck up my bag, which is I'm working on some new teams where I can just attack it free. Mm-hmm. So, because you guys know I get frustrated where I've walled up too much. I go to attack because I don't want to sit there and do the math, and I end up all but one damage, and then my opponent kills me next turn, and then I get all grumpy.
Yeah. So now let's switch to the other side, and this is why we have you here, the KO King, because you are part of your defense is being masterful at using that scarecrow. I always thought that scarecrow was I was the type of person before was okay, I'll just KO it on my turn. But you are like the boss at timing using that scarecrow as a defensive tool when it's the opponent's turn. So in terms of defending, where do you start?
I want to get everything out of their field that's going to deal me high damage. So like with scarecrow, there's a few things I'm going to do. I'm either going to wait till they are going to attack and then take their opponent or take their character, or I'll do it right when they field it. So as soon as they field it and they pass priority, I will hit it, hit blue eyes my scarecrow, and then at times I'll blue eyes it again because I don't want to give it back to them in their field. So, or I wait till they attack and then blue eyes, because I can block a character, because once blocked, always blocked. Mm-hmm. So you can block a character and then take something with Scarecrow or something else. So I think it's important to understand that once blocked, always blocked. There's a lot of things that you can do and just, once blocked, always blocked, which is kind of a key thing.
Yeah. So speaking of blocking, this is always a question that we hear a lot is when do you decide to block and how do you decide who to block with? Because you see a lot of newer players, they'll just block with their biggest guy, call it good. When is it beneficial to block with a smaller guy?
You've got very similar risk and reward to when do you attack. If you are just playing a pure numbers game, in a draft where you may not have great synergies, or if for example's sake, say that both players are playing all vanilla teams, you're just looking at the numbers and doing math. You know, what is it going, is, are you going to be able to clear their field by way of either taking the damage or KOing characters, or taking the damage from key characters and KOing other ones? How many of your characters will go, you know, will get KO'd, and how likely is it that you'll be able to roll them and do a massive swing on your next turn? It's all that same risk and reward. Do the math, look at it, look at the numbers. You also get into trickier stuff like a retaliation team. With a retaliation team, you're probably going to win by blocking. Mm-hmm. You know, with like a villain retaliation team with Black Manta, the only person you don't want to block with probably is Black Manta. Block with everyone else, let them get KO'd, do damage to your opponent, and especially if you can clear their field in that process, and maybe you've got guys that are going to be rolling the next turn for a big attack with an empty field. Conversely, I have, just by doing the math, many times I've won a game because someone said, all right, I'm just going to go for it, and does the big push. And I let everything through for 19 damage, and I beat them the next turn.
Yeah.
They had everything they needed to block me. There's no way that I could have won on that turn until they cleared their own field by attacking me.
Yeah.
Russ, I think
this is a good time for the life is a resource talk.
Yeah, I think new players really get into this. You know, they're like, oh, I'm losing right now. It's 5-20. You only need one life to win. Mm-hmm. So I've been in many games with especially young new players. Well, they're attack with everything, and I ask them like 3 or 4 times, are you sure? And then I take it, and like Kenneth said, swing in for 20 the next turn. And then if we're in a tournament, we usually go back to that so that they can play it through. But you never want to just assume that your opponent's going to block things. You know, if you can take 19 damage and win next turn, do it. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need extra, you know, you don't need extra life. If it's 1-0, you still win. And then it's also important to know when to chump block, right? The when field it affects. You don't want your opponent to keep fielding Storm. So Storm with a 2 defense, never block with anything more than a sidekick. I don't know who would ever play Storm, but there's some of those players.
Yeah. And conversely, if your opponent lets you keep Storm on the field and they attack you, that's exactly who you want to block with, no matter who they're attacking with. Try and knock out your characters that have good either when KO'd or when fielded effects. It's another way of using them.
It's important to know who on your team you want to be fluid. There's characters that you want to stay in the field that give you an ability, like the new Dormammu. You want him in the field. Yeah, he has high stats, but unless he's going to win you the game on that turn, he's good to have in the field.
Yeah, Gorilla Grodd. I keep thinking, Gorilla Grodd, I want him to stay in the field. You know, he's a monster by himself, but he does so much by staying in the field that the only way I'm going to attack with him is if I'm sure I'm going to win.
Yeah, and keeping kind of with the theme of our retaliation team that seems to come up, Black Manta, you want him to be there, or your win condition is not on the field.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do on a villain retaliation team is attack with Black Manta.
Right, and then you have your fluid characters that you always want moving, kind of the opposite. Like when I play Scarecrow, my Scarecrow is never going to be in the field very long. If it's in the field for more than a turn, I would be surprised, because I'm always going to either KO it on my turn or my opponent's turn. So it's constantly fluid. I'm never going to be able to just block with a Scarecrow. I'm going to take my opponent's character. It's the same with a Storm or something. I want to keep that character moving, and it's not about that character being in the field. It's about the abilities that either win fielded or win KO'd.
Yeah. The strong effects that come from moving the character to a different area, really. You want to keep them moving, whether you're looking at attacking or defending. Obviously, you want to look at the situation of your game. You know, there's definitely times where saving your Storm to block is going to be your better option, but attacking with Storm is a pretty sound thing because you want her to move.
Mm-hmm. So, Kenneth, because you are good at aggro, and I struggle with it, when do you feel the best time to block or let through a Guy Gardner or Cheetah? Because those are where I struggle with. I want to block, Cheetah, but then I'm going to take one continuously. It's the same with Guy Gardner. This is why I struggle to play Guy Gardner. It's because I don't know when to let it through or when to block and those kind of situations.
It totally depends on the game and the situation. If I'm playing a good, strong aggro team and someone's coming at me just as aggro, I'm going to be more likely to let their stuff come through. I'm hoping that I can outpace them. If I can't outpace them, an aggro team quickly can become a wallop team because you're talking small, cheap characters that get into the field easily and are purchased easily. So there isn't the stress of having to buy like multiple five costs that, you know, you're only going to get a couple of characters. You're going to have a whole bunch by the time that it really matters. And like you were saying before, you can win with one life. You don't need more than that.
How much do you pay attention to their bag, clogging up their bag? Because that's where I spend a lot of time looking at. If I'm going to take a cheetah, is that going to come back out right away? Or is it going to really mess up their flow?
It depends on the game. A lot of the time, I really kind of don't pay that much attention to their bag. If they have one key character, I tend to pay attention to where that is. If that's on the field, I don't know what's in their bag, though. But if that's in their bag, I know right where it is. But in general, it's just kind of reading the game and knowing where you're at and being able, math has won me more games than any character, than any team, than any single card, anything. Being able to do math faster and more accurately than my opponent has won me way more games than anything else. Whether it's by them not knowing when to attack or not knowing when to block or attacking and clearing their field and letting me through with no resistance. Math is just basic addition and subtraction. It is an invaluable resource in this game.
Here I was like thinking you're going to like, oh yeah, you got to take the derivative of this and take the integral of that.
I think there is, for me, and I think it is important to try to figure out what your opponent's going to do. And I think when you play 2 out of 3, it's a little bit better. But when I face someone in a team that I don't know, my major flaw is I'm assuming they're going to make all the decisions I do, especially with this attack and defense step where I am going through the whole entire situation in my head. And this is why everybody gets frustrated because I'm taking too long, self-included. Yeah. You need to make your opponent make choices in a game.
Yeah.
Because that is what changes the game, is what decisions they're going to make.
And if they make bad decisions, it's always good for you.
Oh, yeah. And
anytime I can make my opponent make a choice, they're going to, and they may make the right choice, but that alters the game, right? You have the 50-50 shot with dice, but I am working currently on trying to make my opponent make choices. And what I do is a terrible flaw in my game is I make their choices for them. And I struggle with that.
Yeah, and there's always, like, it's always good to be able to put pressure on your opponent, whether that means you roll a level 3 morphing jar on turn 3. Do you attack with it, or do you save it to defend? Because it works really good in both spots. You got to kind of look at the game. If they're not playing a fast game, getting that early attack, early hit for 4 points might be the kind of pressure that they need to mess up their judgment or whatever and just feel that they need to go faster than what their team's built for. On the other hand, if they're a really aggro team, now you've got a big body in the field, you can save it there, they're going to be less prone to attack. Anyway, anytime that you can use the team that you've got and attacking and defending to put more pressure on either side of your opponent's game, you're going to have an advantage.
In general, I think it unless you're doing a ring or a bard or something like that, I think it's important to realize that it's hard to hit for 20. Those become longer games. So if I make a bad roll on turn, let's say I roll 4 sidekicks. We've all had those games where it's my first turn. I'm second player. I roll 4 sidekicks. There's times where I'll just hit him for 4. It's not going to hurt. And I've also won games where that little sidekick damage early either won or lost me the game.
Yeah. If you're looking at your team slow and their team slow, that early sidekick blitz off of what feels like a whiffed roll at the time can actually win you the game. But ultimately, attacking and blocking, it comes down mostly to the team and a lot to math. Practice your math. be able to add and subtract quickly. I mean, no one wants to sit there while someone is busting out their calculator to try and figure out, you know, am I gonna get probably 14 damage, but as much as 17 damage, you know, that's
I feel like
tedious.
I need to bring my TI-82 for our next match.
Yeah, it's a great option. But, I mean, math, and know your team. Have a plan. Have a plan for both attacking and defending. Think about some of the archetypes. If you see that you're up against rush, have a plan for that. If you know that you're up against control, have a plan for that. And try not to deviate from that unless the numbers work out the right way.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. I know attacking and defending, it sounds like the simplest part of the game, right? But it's very complicated. I'm glad you guys came to talk about it. If you guys have any questions, again, shoot us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst, and we will get back to you. And we will see both of you guys back later on in the show.
Yep.
Thanks.
Okay, guys, we are back with Alex and the Brown Messiah. How you guys doing?
Doing great.
So funny thing, guys, Green Arrow Flash came out a week later passed, and all of us almost forgot that Doctor Strange came out.
Yeah, it kind of snuck up on me. I was just like, oh wait, Strange came out today.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed the Facebook post that we had, but it was kind of like, oh yeah, hey guys, this is also new and exciting.
Yeah, so if you guys haven't heard of the Doctor Strange pack, it is kind of a hybrid between a booster and a starter pack where there's no boosters. You get all the cards, but you only get two die per card. And so if you want to get max die, you got to buy two of them.
I think if it had max die, this would be the perfect product from them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. It is a little annoying that you do have to buy two of them if you want to get the full. Let's face it, you're getting it for the four Wong dice. But
oh, I don't know about that. I'm getting it for the four mindless one dice.
Oh, that's true. I mean, but I mean,
it is
the Wongs.
It is worth it to buy two packs.
But you're right. If it had four of them, perfect.
Other than that, you know, it's a great format. I would say at least 50% of the cards are good, 25% are great. Almost everything is usable for sure.
Right.
We'll see how much more of the what is it, mystic symbol that's on there?
Yes.
The M?
That's what they're going with, they've actually officially ruled it, that they're calling that M is the mystic symbol.
Not magicians?
I don't know. Maybe somebody has a trademark on magician.
If that proliferates into more sets, I think that, you know, it's going to make some of these cards even more usable. So
I just love how it crosses over in between the two licenses now.
Yeah, there was some in the Green Arrow Flash set, so we have DC and Marvel both with the Mystic.
Yep, so we're definitely going to see that. So you guys actually mentioned a couple cards already, so how about we start out with the card that probably everybody is talking about, and that is Wong.
So all of his versions are actually extremely, extremely playable. It just kind of depends on how you go about it. My opinion is the 3-cost dedicated to the ancient one. That one's the best in my opinion. It says it's got ally, and he says when fielded, you may pay X energy to sacrifice X sidekicks to deal X damage to target opponent. So if you're playing a sidekick team, this is going to be really, really awesome just to get in that last little bit of damage, so that you can kind of swing in. And he's got more of a gobby sidekick team, right?
Because
definitely more of a.
You obviously don't want to sacrifice your sidekicks if you're going to swing in for lethal with it.
Well, I guess what I mean is like towards that mid game and end game sort of.
I would say
there.
Maybe even on like a Lantern Ring team that you're bringing allies, you can attack with those allies, hit them with the Lantern Ring, and then sacrifice them in that step. And
what kind of energy is Wong?
He is a Fist character,
so maybe we'll see the rise of the Fist Ring team.
I'm already scheming in my head.
I was thinking about the same thing.
So is the KO King. So
he's always scheming.
Well, yeah, but I'm specifically about the Fist Ring.
I'm waiting for the day where you're going to turn on this podcast and you're going to be like, welcome to Doubleverse, the podcast about Dice Masters.
Here's my crazy brew.
One day when all of us are gone, only Russ that can make the recording.
So what about the other Wongs?
There's one that's an ally that, while he's active, other sidekick characters get +1/+1.
That's so kind of reverse of the Foot Ninja that was in the Turtle set.
Except for this one gives all sidekicks just +1/+1. It's a static.
Okay.
Bonus. So it's kind of like, it's kind of just like another reprint of like the Captain Americas from back older sets that give +1/+1.
Except for it's a sidekick itself
as well.
And it's 3 cost and 0/1/1 feeling. If you're using a sidekick team, definitely someone to have on there.
And then the last one is the 2-cost Wong. And he also has ally as well. And he's got fast. This is
the one that I'm excited for because Taskmaster.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for a Taskmaster team, he's gonna be really fun.
Yeah.
I think this is the one that everyone was clamoring about with all the spoilers released. But man, it's going to be really hard to pick which Wong you want to put on your team.
Yeah, they're all extremely playable, all really, really good. I definitely like the 2-cost because I like the 1-2 punch.
Yeah, I'm like waiting for it one day when WizKids has so many keywords that each character is going to have like 4 of them, and you just throw it on Taskmaster and he has 16 keywords. So I'm like, yeah, let's do this.
You and your Taskmaster. We're talking about Dr. Strange here, not Taskmaster.
But anything that has a keyword, right?
However, there is one that I would like to talk about that will help your Taskmaster team. That's the mindless one. He is a 3-cost with regenerate. I've been using a 4-cost orc, I think, out of D&D that has regenerate.
It's a troll, actually.
Troll. Yeah, you're right. You're right. The troll. With like a Doctor Strange team, because it's a fist, I can give him overcrush with pim particles, and he has regenerate, so he blocks forever. The mindless one being 3-cost, even better. I can buy him cheaper. I can chalkboard him in. I can do lots of things.
His stats are also just lend for that as well. 3/1, 4/1, 4/2 on all of his faces.
So yeah, like so he can punch in, and you know, if you give him regenerate or overcrush, like he's gonna get 1 or 2 in each time. Mm-hmm. Oh no, they knocked him out. I get to re-roll him.
Exactly. I also like the mindless one, the swarm one. Mostly just because everybody here around me knows I'm trying to work on this were-rat swarm rush team.
See, another keyword for Taskmaster.
There's another one for you there, Kevin. Quiet you. I'm talking about the swarm for me, man.
I think the only thing I have an issue with this, and this is why I don't really like running kobolds as swarm, is the 1/1/2 on the defense line.
Yeah.
It's too easy to ping out. If you have magic missile, you have that global, you're going to remove my characters before I even get to swarm. That's my only issue with using it as a swarm character.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a valid concern. I also am liking the eyes. The eyes are way sweet as well.
The Eye of Agamotto. And I think both you and I are super excited about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm calling it now. With this eye, we're going to see the rise of your machine gun teams again. The teams that use action dice to damage your opponent and just +1/+1 on top of the damage.
Alex is actually the one who turned me on to those sort of teams there. So
yeah, using that uncommon Doctor Strange, please don't rotate that out yet. Agamotto is going to be great. You know, it's continuous. Basically, it's continuous. You put it on a basic action card. So it's not going to get used every turn, but it will make using other actions much better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can either penalize your opponent for it or for using a basic action, or you can buff your characters or reduce costs. You know, I think it's great.
Yeah, and like I said, they're all just like a little bit of more action hate or action oriented, and I think they just lend themselves to those Doctor Strange teams. The other one we also are talking about is the Scarlet Witch, which is actually just a kind of like a reskin and a reprint of the Baron Zemo from Age of Ultron.
Rare. And that's a card that Dr. J turned me on to. And I love playing with it, so I'm excited that there's another version of it.
I was going to say KO King was the one who brought that to me. I think the only downside isn't Baron Zemo also a Bolt character?
He is a Bolt
so
character.
So it's really almost identically the same card. I haven't matched the stats up, but...
Actually, the stats aren't too different here. I actually have it right here. The fielding cost on Baron Zemo is 1/2/2. And then he's got a stat line at 2/4, 3/4, 4/5. Whereas Scarlet Witch, she's a 0/0/1 fielding cost with 1/3, 3/3, and 5/3 faces. So she's a little bit like...
So she gets in the field easier, but she can get knocked out a little bit easier.
Which that seems like a good trade-off between the two, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Plus, it's a rare versus a common.
That
you're just going to get.
Team pack. Uh-huh. They should have done a different color stripe for this set.
Yeah.
There's also Scarlet Witch that I like in it. While she's active, every time you use an action die, you gain 1 life. not that life gain is huge in this, but if I can have someone that just gives me free life on my Doctor Strange team, why not?
Yeah, right. It's just going to be a great way to like mitigate some damage and just keep yourself in the game long run. I also like this one a lot too. I think the other last one we kind of want to bring it, our attention to, not that any of the other cards are bad at all. We just feel like these ones are kind of like the more...
Yeah, we wanted to give you guys kind of the highlights. An overview of what stands out of the pack. Because, I mean, you know...
I mean, people, we're already at 2, 4, 10... At least 11 cards in this, I think, are highly playable.
So we want to bring it kind of back to this 6-cost Dormammu, Burning Ambition. He says, while Dormammu is active, your opponent has, with 3 or more active characters, you may not... I'm totally butchering this. Your opponent with 3 or more active characters may not use action dice. This is going to be really, really great for kind of those rush teams that have Cloud Kill on them, which doesn't allow...
Or if they're trying to imprison.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Prismatic Spray or...
Any sort of like unblockable or like action removal or something. This is going to be really, really helpful against that sort of
thing. For sure. And you know what is really, really cool about this card? WizKids has finally figured out they need to explain what they say, and they in the italics on this it says 3 characters means 3 distinct characters.
Yeah,
it's not word for word what it says, but that's exactly
It's good reminder text. It's good clearing, so you don't have to. Well, I got 3 sidekicks. That's only 1 character, so
yeah, no one's gonna be running to the rules forum looking for what does this mean exactly. 3 characters, is that 3 Guy Gardeners, or is that, you know, 3 separate characters? So that I think is awesome, and if they keep doing that, that's just even better for this game, even better for new people.
And I also think it's a good kind of balancing card, because you look at the rest of the set, it seems to help with a lot of action use. This is kind of that card that says we're not making it too overpowered. Here's kind of your little balancing answer that you may use if you're playing
absolutely
against a lot of people.
And you may look at this and go 6 cost. Ugh. Look at its stats. 1, 2, 2 fielding cost, 5, 5, 7, 6, 8, 8, 8 on the final level.
He's a big guy.
So he's going to hit hard.
Especially if your opponent has a taunt global, they're going to have to think twice about using it, because, I mean, you send them through once, you're losing almost a fourth of your life, at least.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's another mask character, so, you know, that's a mask ring team that he goes on or anything like that.
So any excellent form of control as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, I'm super excited to talk about this set. I'm kind of sad that we didn't realize it, because we're all excited about Green Arrow Flash. But check this out. And if you guys have any questions about this team pack, let us know on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst. These two wonderful gentlemen will usually reply very quickly. Occasionally, you'll see me. But if you want to talk to me, just shoot me an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net.
And if you need convincing on why you should buy this, just hit us up on Facebook, and we will tell you that it's worthwhile.
It is definitely worth it.
All right. We will have you guys back in a second for our next segment. Okay, guys, we are back with Alex, the Brown Messiah, Dr. J, Russ, and in the back, Ken.
Hi!
And we wanted this segment, since 2 new sets now technically have come out, one thing that we always encourage new players to do that they don't do is go back and look at some of the older cards that have come up in previous sets, because they may have been crap then, but now it may have brought up some really good cards. An example is the Lantern Ring that came out. That made Rare Shield Agent just boss in terms of Lantern Ring teams. Mm-hmm. So where do we want to start? Now that we have Green Arrow Flash and Doctor Strange out, what is going to be helpful?
I think Prismatic Spray. Can we all agree on that?
Yeah.
I think it gets better just because there's more characters for it to blink now.
Exactly. It never really went away. But I think with the chalkboard global, it definitely brings it.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Normally it's a 4 cost. Mm-hmm. If you can get it a turn earlier, because it usually takes about 2 turns for it to cycle through if you're going to use it.
Can we just get this out of the way right off the bat? With the chalkboard, all 3 cost characters and lower got better.
Way better.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I think Swarm on that vein got a lot better, because now you can Swarm a lot faster. Mm-hmm. Just because you can get that Kobold in the field turn 2. Turn 1, I buy, you know, a couple Kobolds, so I'm going to Swarm pretty quick there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's solid.
I think along with putting things into your use pile, a good counter to that now is that the rare Mr. Freeze from World's Finest got better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
You're now able to freeze anything that they put in that prep area, or if they have multiple things, you just...
You can bring your chalkboard, and if they want to use it, just be like, okay.
Yep.
He's frozen and you can't use him now. You just wasted your energy.
Still my favorite thematic character ability.
I know. I love so, it. Oh my gosh.
Same with so banishment.
Perfectly thematic.
You know, banishment, yeah. Oh, yeah. 2-cost action, which some of us use anyway, but now you can, if you have that banishment in play, you basically eliminate the opportunity for your opponent to use chalkboard for characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing that, got better is any character with a when they take damage ability, except Joe Costa. But everyone else, you know, has a when this character takes damage, do something because of the static.
Yes.
I mean, you could pair that static up with any one of those characters mm-hmm. and have something awesome. Like Russ was playing with the Agent Venom.
Venom Flash Thompson.
He was playing a card from Spider-Man.
So wait,
that's not Stinger or White Tiger.
I was going to say, there's something else.
Nope, there's another, there's a
now?
Third card in Spider-Man that's
hey,
good.
Hey, MJ was a good card.
Once I started looking back, this Flash Thompson, this Agent Venom is actually pairing well with my static because it goes also with the issue that I struggle with the attack step.
Yeah, for us right? who are not well-versed in ASM, which is a lot of us.
When Agent Venom takes damage but is not KO'd, you may field a sidekick from your used pile or prep area. So what you can do is if you get static in the field, basically I can just field sidekicks and go from there.
That's pretty excellent with the new globals, too, that you have to turn a sidekick into mm-hmm. the energy type you want.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there is this playable card now, this new global. I know some people may have used it before, but some of us have been anti-Parallax. But I believe that Parallax is playable. I may actually put him on.
You're the only one who is anti-Parallax here.
But see, now if I put him on my team and I have static on my team, my opponent can't use.
They're not going to want to use the Parallax at all.
Right. So here's my idea for ramp, because you guys know I'm trying to get away from PXG. I think it's a. I want to eliminate that from my opponent. So if I have static and Agent Venom, then I can field the sidekicks, use Parallax, and use those sidekicks for ramp. So I'm providing a wall and ramp for myself. So that's kind of where I think is good right there. And then I think any character that stops Overcrush, like Songbird, who takes no damage, because Overcrush is a thing now with that big banana.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so yeah, I think you have to be ready for Overcrush by a lot of characters.
On the other side of that, any of the cheap characters that have big attack stats are awesome now with
like Gorilla Goblin, Girl. Goblin Attack Squad or whatever.
Goblin Attack yep. Force, Morphing Jar, even the vanilla Ghost Rider would be worth a second look because that's only a 2-cost, and I think right. we have a 5 yeah. attack on a Tyson.
Yeah.
That literally says just has good stats.
Yep. You know what? You know what else got better for me, and now I'm blanking on it.
So okay, this is so.
You were playing it earlier.
Jump in and yep.
So your spinner.
No, not that guy. I'm saving him for.
Here's one that both you and the KO King have been talking about, Dr. J. Mm-hmm. It is the Rare Devil from Age of Ultron. You guys have been preaching
the
how
rare
much
Daredevil.
How much this card has gotten.
Oh yeah,
and I think on that vein, because Daredevil once fielded KO a mass character.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that is energy specific is benefited.
Right? How dare you want to KO my Hal Jordan?
Yes.
He doesn't have any text.
Hal Jordan,
how
Sinestro,
dare you?
Any of those mass characters, because now your odds are increased that you're going to face those.
Yeah.
Which goes along with the ring that we talked about earlier. The rare ring is that much better because of what you can damage with the ring.
It will only get better and better and better, too, with more crossover characters coming out.
Right. And you...
That does not get better.
Also, you need to do... Anti-ring, I think, is better. You need more anti-ring, because I think ring is going to be a lot more prevalent, because you don't have to have just bolts or just fists.
Yeah, it's easier to get that damage through.
Multiple.
Yep.
Yeah, because if you don't roll perfectly and have all four bolts, but you have bolt fist and you have the Barry Allen that attacks with the ring,
right? It just increases your odds.
Yeah, exactly.
What gets better with this set is the common Saint Walker for More of Light, because you get that 2-cost Hal Jordan, you can chalkboard him in, and then you can chalkboard in all your Saint Walkers, and as long as there's a Green Lantern in the field, he can attack and defend, and he's got like
Hal Jordan's a Green Lantern.
Yeah, he's a Green Lantern. And I think that Saint Walker has like 5 defense on all of his levels. Right.
Yeah, he's a really, really beefy.
Yeah,
Walker.
he's got his top stats are pretty good too. So if you can get him up to level 3, I mean, he's super cheap and got really good stats.
So that's 2 cost characters that are really beefy stats. You have that Gorilla Grodd, which I'm starting to dislike.
Well, and now with things like Katana that you field for free from a multitude of places, like transfer power.
Transfer power is a basic really
action
good
you
got to
watch out for.
Yeah, with the Katana, the transfer power is really good because, and I've learned this playing against that Katana, what little I've played with, you have to assume she's in the field.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
So she's really
no matter what
out.
Rarity you're playing against,
right.
they all have some sort of easy fielding mechanic for that.
I know that whenever I used her in a draft, I always was able to buy her and always have her in the field.
I think Mara's global is that much more important.
The reduce damage of 5 or higher.
Pay a mask if character would deal you 5 or more damage, it instead deals you 2. There's a lot of things that we have to pay attention to with Grodd. It's not just Grodd, it's
Giganta,
right?
Who's 5 cost and has Overcrush and good stats, and then King Shark, who's 6 cost and has amazing stats with Overcrush, and you need something to be able to reduce that damage. And I think Mara gets a lot better.
Can I say, who called it when I said Overcrush is back?
I've been trying to make an Overcrush team for a while, but Hill Giant is not very good.
Well, he is for Taskmaster.
He is for Taskmaster.
You know, I know
KT's on the Taskmaster.
7 is expensive, but man, when you get it, it just makes everything Overcrush is just wicked.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's so many ways to ramp right now. Like, it's not just PXG. It's PXG. It's Sriracha. Mm-hmm. It's relaxing. You know, all these things. There's so many ways. What you're talking about.
What is Sriracha?
Superhero registration. Sorry, guys.
It's a delicious sauce you put on everything.
I do think that this set allows for much more creativity in ramp. And I know you guys have heard me say that I want to get away from PXG, but there's a lot of options and things that you can do. Star Labs, I think, is an amazing global. Yeah.
I was talking to Diego when we were playing one time, like, dude, I think this might be another one that's almost as common as PXG on teams.
Oh, yeah. You definitely
have to plan for it, too, because it's a 2-cost global. So
I like the Rare Huntress as well. If you roll your first roll and you don't get any question marks, you draw a die and add it to your roll. And so that's another way to get ramp in this set.
There's a lot of ways to get quick defenders out for something like a Bard, right? Mm-hmm. If I keep energies and they're going to hit with Bard, I can all of a sudden start labs a couple times. So I think that's a huge benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think any of your board clear rerolls will be more important to you. The storm from AVX that rerolls everything.
Is exactly why Stag is awesome.
Well, also on the lines of that, on the lines of that whole ramp thing, you know, now that you have chalkboard and Eye of Agamotto, depending on whether you want it to go into your bag or into your prep area, you can just use your red dragon and you're immediately quicker to getting your action ramp and getting away from that sort of PXG, something that your opponent can't also use as well. And then with the eye, the 4-cost eye, you can, if you go second and they end up buying your registration act, you can put that eye on your own registration act, and it's just going to start pinging them once they use it.
Sure.
I think Thousand Dragon Global, the one that pay a bolt actions 2 cost less, is that much better, because on turn 1, I can get a 5-cost action into my prep with chalkboard.
Yeah. Immediately. Yeah.
So, you know, I could get that Yu-Gi-Oh! Millennium Puzzle.
Not the Rods
Front
puzzles.
Line as well.
Yeah
Front Line.
That one.
The Boo, Front Line.
Your favorite team right now.
The Finger of Death.
Yes.
That's a 5-cost.
That's true. What is that?
Isn't there?
It's the worst basic action ever made.
The Talisman, 5-cost.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, let's start using that Talisman.
Of Ultimate Evil, first turn, prep area.
And there was the...
Oh, my gosh.
There was the guy...
Talisman with this... Agent Venom little combo.
Can I tell you guys, I know you guys are listening, but Ken just has this amazing look on his face after we mentioned Talisman that I needed to share with the world that he made this amazing
face. He looks so skeptical about that.
The other thing that kind of comes back, and I don't know how viable this is. I haven't played it, but I was talking with someone discussing on Dice Masters Unlimited on Facebook about someone using Deck of Many Things to do 19 damage on turn two. Maybe Deck of Many Things is now a playable card.
We already talked about that. We've already written that one off.
That's funny.
I'm not saying I've done it. I'm just saying it's out there.
What I was thinking of with the talisman is talisman getting better means that you might actually even be able to use Batcave.
Ooh. I was seriously looking at the super rare Batcave. I was like, I could chalkboard that thing in turn one, and then I could start buying my basic actions and just load up on something, and then, like, change of heart. And then when I want to steal your characters and then just punch you in the face.
I think the super rare Batcave works well with the Doctor Strange little machine gun.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Just buy them all, and then just, like, one turn be like, I'm going to roll these 8 actions. Boom, game over.
I just want to see that, like, a Batcave with, like, 8 basic actions just underneath
it. Batcave, and then bring Power Bolt and Magic Missile.
And it's just a ticking time bomb, and then you're like, now I'm going to roll all these.
With the new set, you can play a full Batman team with Robin.
How was
Bruce
that?
Bruce Wayne, it's not good. But it's still fun. Batarang, Batmobile, Batcave, Batman, White Lantern, Batman, Black Lantern, Batman. Although Black Lantern, Batman KOs all your Batman. So there is a little combo there you could do, but still it's kind of weird.
Savage Steve or Steve the Sage, whatever you want to call him, he brought a Justice League Retaliation team this weekend that I think he went 3-1 and four rounds of Swiss.
It was a BC team. If you guys didn't see it, we have it on our Twitch page, twitch.tv/KTData, and we'll have it on YouTube shortly.
Yeah, it was one of our first matches of the day, and he kept fielding. He had the commons katana, and your opponent would feel it. He would take one damage. Batman would bring that damage back because he fielded a Justice League character, and it was really, really impressive. I was like, whoa, Justice
League
retaliation.
Definitely a faster retaliation for Justice League.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing that I liked about this set, it sprinkled in so many different affiliations, and so you can look at those and go back and say, are these affiliations even stronger now? Like Teen Titans. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Teen Titans definitely got way better.
Yeah. With this set.
We actually did, Jeremy ran an all Teen Titans.
He did run
tournament.
An all Teen Titans.
I don't think he did that well, but he did it.
Yeah, he did it. maybe with the right cards. There,
I think
you might have to go outside the Teen Titans there. But I think it's viable.
Well, the super rare Starfire. If you get a bunch of those cheap Teen Titans, one of each, you're gonna deal five, six, seven damage every time you attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So I think anything board clear is really exciting me now. Like full board clear, not like. That's new for me, but with the Black Adam that forces my opponent to put it back on the cards or
pay a life.
If I can like breath weapon and wipe their board.
I believe that's take one damage.
Yeah.
Not pay one life.
I know.
It's redirectable.
Yeah. plan on pairing that Black Adam with the other Black Lantern Aquaman and making my opponent really get stuff back on the cards.
Do you think
I just want you to burn that team.
Do you think Walls will be bigger? Do you think Betrayal or 11th card will come back? I hope so.
I did so well at it.
Yeah, but that was draft. So that's a little different.
I do, but I think if we're looking at competitive, you almost need the ability to have that quick wall with the Bard. So I think there's double-edged sword.
Yeah. For sure.
That's why Dormammu. So I have it. You know, I've been playing with some teams and I build the wall pretty quick. But if I have Dormammu, then Betrayal is fine for me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because they can't roll it. So
yeah,
that Dormammu.
I really
he's
like
a beast.
Dormammu.
He's so hard to play against.
His stats. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he's really, really big.
Yeah. Can I mention my favorite card that got better?
Oh yeah.
And that's the Doom Caliber Knight, the rare from Yu-Gi-Oh.
And you've been looking at this card for a while.
Forever. When the card comes out, that's going to complement this sucker. It's going to be unstoppable.
What's his ability?
His ability is when your opponent uses a global ability, you spin him down one level and cancel the global ability, and they can't use it for the rest of the turn. And so they saved all those Master PXG. They want to use that, spin him down, the rest of their PXG energy is completely wasted.
So how did this get better because of the set?
Because of the rare, the Atom, the Chase rare here in Utah that is impossible to find. I got one. And his ability is whenever you can use a global, you can spin him down to level 1 and spin another character up to level 3. And so what I do is cancel the globals, then spin him down, and then spin back up. And I pair him with the Atom from War of Light, because it's not the Atom, it's just Atom. Yes. In War of Light. And he spins up on his own, like twice. You can spin him up twice on his turn. So spin him up, polymorph the other guy, the other Atom, to spin him up so I can keep my Doom Caliber 9 at level 3. And
we played with my Flash Thompson team we played, but I didn't think I relied on globals because I'm trying, you know, no PXG, but I still was using globals more than I thought.
He's like, I want a Parallax.
You know, that
crap.
That team makes me want to play Synergy a lot more now because it's not Synergy. Considered a global.
Exactly. Like I was looking at his, he had Zatanna. I was like, why doesn't he feel that and screw with my sidekicks? Like, because it's not a global ability.
You had no sidekicks.
But I was keeping energy to polymorph.
Oh, that's true.
So
maybe we should build a crossbow team.
Yeah, no,
maybe we should
absolutely not. I don't care what the poll said. Absolutely,
if you guys
not.
Don't know what's happening, check out our last episode.
Also, check out that poll; it's on Facebook.
I will say though that I know I like to prep this card a lot, but the Black Lantern Aquaman, because of the cross pulse, impulse, anything that I can still buy. If I can put stuff back on my card, it's that much better.
Russ, you just play backwards. That's why.
Yeah. If I can give my opponent enough life, they will explode.
Well, if I have to give my opponent life, I just use the common Hawkeye that went field to give my opponent 2 life.
Shut up.
I do that just so I can swing it for 20.
At some point, they'll come out with a card that says, if your opponent would gain life above, like, 30, they lose.
Yeah, they lose.
And then you'll find a way to make that work.
or just be like in Yu-Gi-Oh! Didn't they have that one card where it switch your lives? All of a sudden, so you, like, whittle them down, let them whittle you down to, like, 1, and then you apply it, and it switches their...
Oh, that would be cool.
That would be so crazy.
So rude.
Oh man.
I
do think life gain is getting more important in the game. Mm-hmm. A lot of these will be able to negate some of that damage you're going to take every turn.
So there's a lot of characters now that deal you 1 damage. So the little bit of life gain, I think, is important.
Oh, yeah, the closer you can keep yourself to 20, the more they have to hit you with. So, I think life gain is going to be... It's going to start making an appearance on teams.
Yeah. Maybe this isn't the place to mention it, but I think this set's going to shake the meta up a lot.
And absolutely.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to do some good things for the game.
There's a lot of, I feel, anti-PXG stuff, like that super rare Zatanna.
Yeah, and there's a lot of anti-rush stuff because a lot of rush teams rely on sidekicks.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's
also
stuff
actions.
That shuts those
also
down.
Also actions to kind of, like, get the last 3 with cloud kills, things like that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good stuff in this.
I think
it's going to shake up the game in a good way.
I think the original Iron Fist is a little bit better now, too, just because of the 1 damage that it negates with retaliation.
Can you really get better definitely. Than an already perfect card, though?
Iron Fist is your favorite character, Russ. So
yeah.
I mean,
well, now I actually use it for the damage.
Yeah, he realized there's another ability on it.
It does 2 things?
All right, guys. So this is a great talk. And of course, you know, there are 1,700 cards out there. Let us know if you guys look back and found a really card that when it first came out, we're like, this is a waste of cardboard, and now it's amazing with this new set. We'd love to hear it. Leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst, or send us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net. Gentlemen, it's been a blast. Always a good time, and I guess we'll go back to looking at old cards and praising how awesome Crosspulse is.
We'll come back to this with Deadpool. It's going to be good.
And that's it for this episode of Double Burst. If you have any other questions about attacking or defending, let us know. Or if there's a card from Doctor Strange that we didn't talk about, we'd love to hear from you guys. You can always email us, doubleburst@ktdata.net, or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst. Big thanks to everybody who showed up to our Extra Life events last week. We raised some good money for the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. We appreciate it. Had a lot of fun. Gave out a lot of super rares. If you guys missed out, don't worry. We are going to have another event November 5th, 2016. And of course, we will be doing the live stream and everything else. And we'll be doing the online raffle too. So make sure you guys pay attention to Double Burst and on our Facebook page on where you can enter and win a super rare. Big thanks to Game Haven Sandy for giving us a place to record. We always appreciate that. And big thanks to you guys at home for listening. You guys rock. Until next time, my friends, may your rolls be ever in your favor.